Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. Today's short is brought to you by Kirk Gray.
We want to talk about a little bit about how I got into this whole field of reliability engineering. And it all started really back when I became a field service engineer and started troubleshooting semiconductor equipment, high vacuum equipment used to manufacture the microchips. Everything I did work on, thin film deposition, evaporation, etching. I worked on ion implanters that did doping. And a lot of my work through that, realizing that these machines that were manufacturing the chips did have occasional manufacturing related issues as far as producing consistency. And the manufacturers like Intel and AMD and the people using this equipment would tell me about some variations that would cause problems in the chips. And those were, of course, assignable causes for the chip failures. And I worked my way up the chain to, of course, work on the circuit boards and systems inside these very expensive production manufacturing equipment in the semiconductor industry. But what I realized from that work is that that there is so much that is the equipment reliability is very dependent on consistency in manufacturing, and things like connectors unplugged or loose fasteners or a loose screw or a wire clipping that had fallen into the circuit board and shorted out a circuit was more likely the cause of failures, accidents, mismanufacturing, and sometimes a missetting by the operator on the equipment running was the cause of failure. Luckily, later on in my career in the mid-80s or late 80s, I started to work for Storage Technology, and there I came across a man who had some really radical ideas about reliability, Dr. Greg Hobbs, who was a PhD in structural dynamics. And the interesting thing about Greg was, like myself, we had never really taken any formal reliability courses. Greg understood the structure and physics and was very knowledgeable about fatigue, damage, and those kinds of things. And his approach to reliability made such straightforward sense to me, because he basically said, don't look at it from, you know, some standpoint of a regular occurrence of failures or models that, and I don't think Greg even knew about the Mill Handbook 217 or previous notions of how reliability engineering was done, but he knew enough to realize that that was not a very efficient or effective method of developing reliability. But he made a straightforward approach that was really just testing to find the strength of the product. And he found, and he would surprise many people on how strong products were, how wide a thermal operating range they could actually have, even though they weren't designed. Also, he would show that it's very difficult to break good product or break product that doesn't have any weaknesses in it. You can apply very high level of stress to good product, and it really won't cause much fatigue life or life, total life, to be removed. So these concepts were just from my background in repairing equipment, made the most straightforward sense. Loose connectors, well, vibration would obviously dislodge that, or say a wire bond or a solder joint, a cold solder joint, which I saw a lot of. It was easy to see how this could be applied. And in my first actual consulting job in helping a company use HALT to develop more reliable products, we reviewed their failure analysis of their past products coming back from the field, which is what I would encourage every reliability engineer to focus on. What is the history? Where is the actual failure diagnosis of products that have failed in the field? And does this correlate with what traditional reliability engineering has been teaching as far as models go? If it doesn't, then you must set a new path, and that is look at the product from its capability, from its strength. And again, if you have a flat circuit board and you put it into a vibration chamber and you try and break it with vibration, it can be very, very difficult to do if not take quite some time at a very high level of vibration to get that to fail. So using these techniques made so much sense. And Greg had showed me, we worked together at Storage Technology as he was an internal in-house consultant, and we got many, many hours of lunches and time to talk to each other about these things. But we had both come from a very practical knowledge standpoint of seeing field failures and having actually precipitated the same thing in a chamber. And that's one thing that certainly put Storage Tech on the path to using HALT and HASS widely, was that Greg proved it for a product that they already knew was unreliable in the field. Greg was able to reproduce 80 to 90% of the field reported field problems in a thermal and vibration chamber. It was actually quite unique, applicable to only one product, which became a problem later because company kept asking me what I was going to do with this chamber that could only really run and was custom for fit for one product, and it wasn't very useful for the other general circuit boards like HALT chambers are used today. So for all those engineers out there that are either getting into reliability, and I think they eventually will learn if they're working in a company and are able to go into failure analysis and look at the products coming back, initial products in the field, or even products that fail in development during the early development stages, they'll find that those things are not electromigration or semiconductor long-term wear-out mechanisms, but it's generally, you'll see, and this is was my assessment over the many years of working in the industry and working in field service and repairing products, that most failures are caused by assignable are a result of assignable causes from mismanufacturing or misuse by a customer, and rarely are the traditional long-term mechanisms such as electromigration or hot carrier injection that I've ever seen identified as a cause of failure in the short term, in the 1 to 3 or 4 years that a product may be used, and certainly the early part of the product's use. Infant mortality is almost always a manufacturing flaw or a weakness in the design that was overlooked. So for you out there going into or furthering your career in reliability engineering, I strongly encourage that you investigate, and even though it's very difficult sometimes to find where that field returns are going to, and they may be remote at a OEM facility or a subcontract supplier, that you must go seek that to be able to learn how to make reliable products. So one statement I have for everybody is, the only way you can make a reliable product is first understand what in the past has caused the product to be unreliable.
Thank you for listening to today's Speaking of Reliability short. We look forward to hearing your stories. Head over to AscendoReliability.com/go www.thebrightside.org/SOR and let us know what's been pivotal in your career. What have you learned that has made a difference?